ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Thursday, the 2nd of April. I'm Melissa Clark in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has used a rare address to the nation to outline the government's response to the war in the Middle East and to encourage people to take public transport if they're able to. The address has been criticised by minor parties and the opposition for being too timid in tone, but praised by a leading business group. It comes ahead of an announcement today the government will start providing interest-free loans for struggling freight, fuel and fertiliser companies. Oliver Gordon reports.
Keep calm and carry on.
You should go about your business and your life as normal. Enjoy your Easter.
The Prime Minister has used a rare address to the nation last night to gently encourage Australians to catch public transport.
And if you're hitting the road, don't take more fuel than you need. Just fill up like you normally would.
Interrupting regular programming, Anthony Albanese's 3.5-minute speech acknowledged Australians were doing it tough and listed the government's headline responses so far, including its decision to make fuel cheaper for motorists.
Cutting the tax on every litre of petrol by 26 cents. Those savings have started showing up at your petrol station.
We needed more detail and we needed a clear plan.
Opposition leader Angus Taylor appeared on Channel 7 shortly after the address.
There was nothing in what the Prime Minister said tonight or has said during the week that can give them the confidence they need to know that we're in the situation we need to be.
One Nation MP Barnaby Joyce headed to Sky News to voice his disapproval too.
He wants us not to be concerned. Well, we are concerned. There are so many towns without fuel.
Addresses to the nation are rare and have been used by former prime ministers during wars, pandemics and financial crises. Joe Scard is a crisis communications expert and former Labor advisor.
In the face of information overload, he's created a cut-through moment.
She says governments are scared of overreach after COVID-19.
I think governments, particularly this government, clearly has learnt from that and have decided to go slowly.
Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry CEO Andrew McKellar believes the address hit the right tone.
We don't want to lead to a situation where there is excessive demand, and you know, we've seen that that's happened in some places.
Later today, the Prime Minister will announce the federal government will provide interest-free loans to struggling freight, fuel and fertiliser businesses. Speaking at the National Press Club, Mr. Albanese will also lay out the case for his most ambitious federal budget to date and say the upheaval sparked by the global oil crisis only heightens the case for economic reform. ACCI Chief Executive Andrew McKellar says it's important the federal government remains committed to boosting productivity.
I think that's still very important to have a strong level of ambition in the budget.
The Prime Minister will address the National Press Club at 12:30 Eastern Daylight Time.
Oliver Gordon reporting there. The ACCC is forecasting a potential shortage of gas through winter. Across the eastern seaboard, there could be a shortfall of up to 12 petajoules, which is about the amount of energy that 76,000 homes would use through winter. It's prompted the federal government to formally put gas producers on notice to supply more gas locally or face restrictions on exports. The Federal Resources Minister joins me now. Madeleine King, thanks for speaking with AM this morning.
Good morning, Mel. It's great to be here.
Could you explain for me the action you're taking to prevent this potential shortfall?
Yeah, most certainly. So yesterday I issued that notice of intent under the Australian Domestic Gas Security Mechanism for the months of July, August and September. And that is based on the report of the ACCC, as you mentioned, that forecasts. It's a relatively small shortfall, and there's a range of 12 petajoules to even an oversupply of 3. But the issue for me is that we are going into winter, and at a time when we see this international conflict in the Middle East causing disruption to supply, I wanted to make sure, and the government wanted to make sure, that we have all the tools available to us should there ever be an issue with our domestic supply. So what this does brings all the exporters to the table to prove that they will make sure that shortfall doesn't come to pass. So this is a forecast only at the moment, and I want to make sure that forecast does not become reality, so Australians get the gas they need.
You've already been in talks with gas exporters, though. Have they been unwilling to commit more supply for East Coast users? Is that why you've had to pull out this big stick and threaten to use it to get them to come to the table?
Yeah, and if I could just make a point of clarification as well, like this is about the East Coast market having a potential shortfall. In Western Australia and the Northern Territory, they are well supplied with gas, so I'll make sure that they get an unlimited volume permission if we take this much further. But as to the East Coast exporters, that's correct what you say. I have asked them to re-sign the heads of agreement that expired at the start of the year and been in negotiation for some time, and they've been unwilling to or unable to come to an agreement on that. And in the absence of that agreement, which would have been preferred, it would be an industry-led response, we are not going to, you know, let this just go into the thin air. We're going to make sure we use the tools we have, which is this notice of intent, to make sure that these companies come to the table and make sure that the Australian people have the gas they need.
And what's the time frame here for these gas exporters to come to an agreement before you make the decision whether or not to restrict their exports?
So 30 days, we will work together over the next month. In fact, I expect we'll work together very much quicker than that, much more quickly than that, to ensure that these guarantees are put in place so that everyone can be reassured that Australians will have enough gas for the winter. That's the timeline. But what's really important is we don't want a repeat of 2022 when we didn't have these tools available to us, when there was a gas shortage. There was no ADGSM could not be activated. Now we've reformed that so it can be activated ahead of winter when we see these forecasts. So this is a government that has got the tools. I'm prepared to use them. I haven't done this before because I haven't needed to, because industry has been more forthcoming. We next year will have the domestic gas reserve in place, and so we are going through the tail end of a transition from this gas security mechanism to the reserve. But it's really important in a transition that we use all the tools we have. As the Prime Minister has said, we need to be over-prepared during this moment of international conflict and crisis so that Australians can be reassured that their government will make sure they have the gas they need.
Gas producers have been pushing back in recent days against the government's plans to introduce an East Coast gas reservation. They've also been speaking out against the crossbench push for a windfall profits tax. Now they have this formal notice of intent from you. Are you now in a political battle with the gas industry?
Oh, not at all. In fact, Australian Energy Producers, AEP, their peak body supports the reservation, the gas reservation, and we've been working with AEP and industry around what that looks like, and it's complicated. So we are taking the correct amount of time to make sure we get it right. But this is, in fact, a well-supported a policy of government, and that's because I think the gas industry realises they need to reassure people that they're doing the right thing, supplying Australians gas before they export it into the international market. And that international market is vitally important for our economy, but also for our regional neighbours. So we keep working on that. As for the various media conferences and other publications I've seen on a potential extra tax on the gas industry, well, as we've been very consistently saying, our policies haven't changed in that regard. Right now, I'm really focused on making sure we get the product, the commodity, the gas, into people's homes and into industry over the winter.
Madeleine King, thank you very much for speaking to AM this morning.
Thanks very much, and I hope all your listeners have a really wonderful Easter.
Thank you. That's the Federal Resources Minister, Madeleine King, there. Now, back to the Prime Minister's address to the nation, and the Coalition has been critical of it, suggesting it lacked detail and sent mixed messages. Angus Taylor is the Leader of the Opposition. He joined me earlier. Angus Taylor, thanks for speaking with AM this morning.
Great to be with you.
Do you think this moment warranted a formal address to the nation from the Prime Minister?
Well, at a time when Australians are wondering whether they can get away on their Easter holidays, it's a wonderful time of year, and whether they're going to be able to get home at the end of the holiday, what they need is confidence. They need clarity, not confusion. And last night's address didn't help. It could have been a social media post. It didn't lay out what the situation was clearly. It didn't lay out what the plan was clearly, and it certainly didn't give the confidence Australians need right now to get about their lives. And right now, that's what we want.
Do you think the government is trying to avoid creating a sense of panic by giving too much detail at this stage?
Well, they keep saying that there's lots of fuel in the system. So lay that out, make that clear. Help us to understand that, and Australians won't panic. I mean, Australians, we're sensible people. I think people can work it out if they're given the facts. I mean, each day in question time for weeks now, we've been asking the government questions. We get very selective answers at best. Sometimes they give us the facts, sometimes they don't. But in total, we just don't understand the situation we're facing. And whilst on the one hand, we're told there's nothing to worry about, moments later, we're being told there's a national crisis. And these things don't add up.
And do you think fuel restrictions should be put in place sooner rather than later, after Easter?
Well, Mel, this is the problem. I don't know. What we need is regular daily updates of where are the gaps in the system, how's the government filling them, and how can we have confidence that we can get on with our lives in an appropriate way. I don't want to see heavy-handed mandates. That's the last thing. I don't think Australians want to go back to that COVID era of heavy-handed mandates. But if the government thinks that's what's needed, they should lay that out. Or if it's not needed, they should lay that out clearly. Meanwhile, we've got the Western Australian government running its own race, and I think we're going to see state premiers. We're already seeing them brawling over the GST, and we will see them setting off in their own directions because of the lack of leadership we're seeing at the national level.
We're getting an address from the Prime Minister today at the National Press Club, and amongst the things he's going to talk about, he'll announce a $1 billion package of support for interest-free loans to help businesses who are going to struggle through the next couple of months. Is that a welcome development?
Well, I've only just seen the announcement, and it was sensible support to get through tough times for businesses that are being severely impacted. Obviously, we'll look hard at that and look to support it if we can. What we don't want, though, is creating extra inflationary pressures in the economy right now. We announced a fuel excise cut last week. We offset it. We said, here's where the savings will come from. That's because we don't want more inflation.
And just finally, a potential shortage of gas in the eastern states over winter has prompted the federal government to threaten to limit exports unless gas producers make more supply available for domestic use. Madeleine King's issued a formal notice of intent. Is that the right move to secure gas for local users?
Well, I've always believed that we need to make sure that Australian gas is working hard for Australians. That's incredibly important. But I also believe that the best way to achieve that is more drilling and more gas coming from under the ground. We're seeing the importance now, despite the fact that there's a growth of renewables in the economy, we're seeing the importance of gas and oil for our economy and the reason why
But just right now, if there's going to be a shortage over this winter, developing new gas oil fields isn't going to help that quickly. So for the circumstance right now, is the government right to wave around the big stick at the gas producers?
Well, you're right to say that the government's got us to a position where it is desperate. That is the point. My point is we keep putting band-aids on bullet wounds across our economy, whether it's in gas, whether it's dealing with inflation or interest rates. What we need to do is solve the underlying problem. As I said up front, we do need to make sure Australian gas is working hard for Australians, but the best way to do that is to make sure gas is coming out from under the ground. In existing well-established basins, drilling can convert to more gas production quickly. It doesn't take long, but we do need to make sure that we don't get ourselves in this position again.
Angus Taylor, thank you very much for speaking to AM this morning.
Good to be with you, Mel.
And Angus Taylor is the opposition leader. Donald Trump claims Iran has asked for a ceasefire, which he said he'd consider when the Strait of Hormuz is reopened. Iran state media says the US president's statement is false and baseless. Reporter Chantelle Alkouri is in Washington. She joined me a short time ago. Chantelle, this sounds a bit familiar. We've heard Donald Trump claim a couple of times there are talks underway and Tehran reject those. What exactly has Mr. Trump said this time?
That's right. He's proven once again he can be full of embellishments and unpredictability. He's made a post to Truth Social saying that Iran's new regime president, who he described as much less radicalized and far more intelligent than his predecessors, have just asked the US for a ceasefire. He says that's something they'll consider once the Strait of Hormuz is open, but until then, we'll be blasting Iran into oblivion or back to the Stone Ages. Now, it's not actually clear who he's referring to, given that Iran does not actually have a new president. The current president has been in that position since before the war. Even if these conversations are happening, any sort of ceasefire would be dependent on the Supreme Leader and the IRGC. The president would not have the power to control the regime. Iranian officials have already come out and reportedly told Iranian state television that Mr. Trump's claims of any sort of ceasefire request from them are false and baseless. In fact, Iran has been disputing his previous claims that direct negotiations are taking place. So there's obviously been a lot of mixed messages from Donald Trump.
And Donald Trump is going to give an address to the nation. One of a couple of leaders around the world doing that are in this period at the moment. What can we expect from this address?
It's not actually clear what he'll be saying. We do know that Reuters is reporting that in a phone call with the president, he said that the US will be out of Iran pretty quickly and could return if needed. They're also reporting he's expected to reiterate that 2 or 3 week timetable for ending the war in that address. Just yesterday, he said that that could be the timeline once he felt confident that Iran would not be able to build a nuclear weapon. Today, he's obviously been talking about continuing to bomb Iran into a state of oblivion if the strait is not open. Now, we know thousands of US soldiers are reportedly arriving in the Middle East as we speak. This has obviously all shown that there's been constant shifts and contradictions from the president. It could very well be a deliberate strategy in an attempt to control the narrative right now. It could also demonstrate that the war might not have a clear objective or a clear end, and he's trying to reassure the public that it's going to plan.
Chantelle Al-Khoury in Washington there. Now, a mission to take humans to the moon for the first time since the 1970s is due for liftoff this morning, and Australian engineers and scientists are playing a crucial role. David Sparks reports.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
When humans first walked on the moon in 1969, Australian technicians were involved.
I'm going to step off the land now.
A team at Honeysuckle Creek Tracking Station south of Canberra received grainy footage and sound live from Apollo 11 and relayed it to the world.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Now, NASA is trying to get back. Several Australian groups are involved in the mission. Dr. Kate Ferguson is with the Australian National University's Institute for Space, which will be part of a revolutionary new communications system.
So on board the Orion spacecraft, they have a laser communication terminal that they'll be using to communicate back on Earth. And laser communications is a bit of a game changer because it offers much higher data transmissions, sort of 10 to 100 times faster than what's possible with radio communications. So at ANU, our role is in the ground segment. So we have a quantum optical ground station at Mount Stromlo Observatory here in Canberra that will be a test ground station as part of this mission.
That laser communication will allow high-definition vision and audio to come through live.
We're trying to show the benefit of that to this mission and then hopefully how that could provide increased scope to future missions.
Australian organisations and companies have also manufactured components for the Artemis II mission's Orion spacecraft. Enrico Palermo heads the Australian Space Agency.
So there's actually two Australian companies that have built components that are flying as part of the Orion capsule. So you've got a company called Axiom Precision out of Adelaide that's machined components, and Newpress Group out of Newcastle. So they're actually Aussie-built hardware going to the moon.
Artemis 2 has been scheduled to launch several times, but forced to delay because of technical problems. The mission is not going to land on the moon. Instead, it'll carry astronauts around it, gathering information and conducting tests to help future missions to put humans on the lunar surface once again. The spacecraft and its crew will splash land in the Pacific Ocean.
David Sparks. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Melissa Clark.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. He's massing troops in the Middle East, but says he's winding down the war in Iran. So, will Donald Trump keep the conflict going or end it? Today, Kelly Greco, defence strategy expert from the Simpson Centre, on why whatever Trump's next move is, the chaos will continue. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on ABC Listen.